we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead. There are so many oddities we continue to talk about over the last 2.5 years. You know, and I was just thinking this morning, actually, what will we say just a few more years from now? Like, you know, because right now we should say over the last couple of years, we'll say, well, 5 years back, do you remember when? And I wonder how we'll look at that in the rearview mirror. Welcome, my fellow Americans, and to our friends around the globe here to America Out Loud Pulse. It is Malcolm Out Loud here along with...
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough of the McCullough Report.
Just before we came on, just seconds ago here, I'll give you an example. I received an email in from one of our questions here, and it said, my sister-in-law, a nurse, died October 7th after receiving the COVID and the booster shots. Can my brother sue? And if so, who and how? And it just caught me as I knew we were coming onto the program today, and I thought, you know, it just gets more crazy and crazy, and the people who put their lives on the line. And I'd like to say I'm surprised, but I'm really never surprised anymore at the messages that come in here, you know?
I am not either. I have to tell you, I think we've seen it all. And it looks like, according to most of the life insurance reports that are coming in, it's much larger than we ever thought.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot to unravel on this, as we've been saying right along now. We've got an exciting program today for everybody. We've got some questions later we'll get with, which is our tradition here, our trademark that Dr. McCullough and I have been doing, but got a really, really special treat right up front here in the program. You may or may not know that our brother Peter here, Dr. Peter McCullough, co-authored a book with John Leake. And the title of that book is The Courage to Face COVID-19. Preventing hospitalization and death while battling the biopharmaceutical complex. Now, that book, by the way, is in the America Out Loud bookstore. We have great books on there. And also, if you just go to the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com, you've probably noticed this. On the right sidebar, partway down, there's a series of books that change every few days. You'll find this brand new book right there from Dr. McCullough and John Leake right there on the front page. Easy to order it, so just so you know how you can do that. Now let's bring on John Leake now. And John, it is awesome to have you on. When Dr. McCullough said, let's have John on, let's do it. Welcome to America Out Loud Pulse.
Thank you, Malcolm. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Tell folks just a bit about yourself, please.
Well, I grew up here in Dallas, Texas, where I met Dr. McCullough, went to college up in Boston, and then I got a graduate school scholarship to study in Vienna, Austria. When I was in Vienna, I embarked on my career as a true crime author. And in my work as a true crime author, I went pretty deep into the literature of forensic medicine. How do you examine a body to determine if there's foul play? So I've long had an interest in the forensic medical aspect of crime. And so when SARS-CoV-2 came to the United States in late March, late February, early March of 2020, I began to suspect that something was very strange was going on in the public health world. And I began to think it could even rise to the level of a crime story. But I quickly ascertained that I would need to team up with someone who has real medical authority in order to properly research and investigate this crime story. So that's what I did. I contacted Dr. McCullough exactly a year ago. And we started meeting and talking, and we decided to team up and write a book together.
Well, medical authority. So you get the top guy on the planet, huh?
Well, not only the top guy who has this passion and competence at medical scholarship, But someone who's really willing to take this thing on rather than just keeping his head down and hoping it'll go away.
Because it takes courage. It takes an awful lot of courage. And because it's coming at you three ways to Sunday. And as you swim through these murky waters and trying to figure it all out. So I started reading some of the book here. And I noticed Dr. McCullough, it's talk about the early signs of this thing. You talk about at the beginning of 2020, and you reference back to early treatment. Now, when you and I started talking back there in early 2020, that was the soundbite we were trying to put out, early treatment, early treatment, early treatment. Now, of course, I never knew that I would get COVID myself and that my wife would almost die from it. I had no knowledge. So it's sort of, I heard it, but it really didn't set with me what we were really talking about. Boy, did I find out the hard way what early treatment really meant. That was the key to this whole thing, wasn't it?
It was. And I can tell you, I remember those desperate phone calls we had firsthand when you and Dee were so sick and Dee was so near death. And without the degree of intensity of treatment we provided in the hospital, I'm convinced probably both you and her won't be here right now. That's how vital early treatment is. And we, with Senator Ron Johnson, starting back in May with Pierre Corey and his breakthrough message to America that steroids played a partial role. And then myself, Harvey Risch and George Fried, and then again, Pierre Corey and J.J. Rochter and others, bringing the message to America through 2020 through courageous U.S. Senate testimony. That's, be in the senatorial record forever. We told America that we could treat COVID-19 and prevent hospitalizations and death. And through the America Out Loud platform, I think by and large, we changed the outcome for America.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible, Peter. Just incredible. John, what's the biggest, when you look at this project, what a gift of this book here, what's the biggest takeaway from you, do you think, that that people get out of it?
Well, I think that people need to understand that this is a crime story. There was a deliberate, there was a deliberate fraudulent misrepresentation to the public about what exactly we were dealing with. It was presented as an unassailable virus against which there was nothing in the pharmacopoeia that would work. Everyone, young and old, healthy and strong, or old and infirm alike, would just have to hole up at home and wait for a vaccine. That is not a theory. There is an abundance of evidence and public utterances by the network who pursued this endeavor that there is no treatment. Stay home. Isolate, social distance. If you get really sick, you can't breathe anymore, then go to the hospital for ER care. Apart from that, we have brilliant scientists that are working on a new generation of vaccines. And right. Once we get that vaccine, then we will be able to restore something like normalcy. So it's a massive fraud. But it also has an element of negligent homicide, mass negligent homicide, because what does it mean exactly to deny a man, to impede him, or even to prohibit him from receiving medicines and treatments that could help him to stay out of the hospital? To put it in a very, I think, easy to understand illustration. If you're at sea on a ship and someone falls overboard in high seas, you have a duty to throw a life ring to the guy. And I think this medical, the complexity of it has obscured the fact that there was a duty to try to help people. And this proposition that, well, you can't give people something unless you 100% proven efficacy. That's just not true. Anytime we're confronted with an emergency, we do our best to try and help. So I think people need to understand that this is a true crime story, and that's how Dr. McCullough and I have written the story.
But they didn't have that 100% efficacy on the vaccines.
Correct. This is a notable contrast.
Yeah, right.
You see, suddenly there's this equivocation about, well, you know, maybe the vaccines don't prevent infection, but there's evidence that they prevent you from becoming gravely ill. The evidentiary standard completely changes when you go from a discussion of early treatment to vaccines.
Yeah, there's something else to the agenda, and that's the thing that haunts us. All three of us guys, I could tell. I mean, we're very logical thinkers, so we don't really think in those other worlds, and we just look at the data, the facts, and we make that assessment. See, with this story here, you really can't do that because none of it makes any sense. You know, this is the first time, Dr. McCullough's first time I've heard us refer to this. I really like this because it's the first time I've heard it being referred to as a crime story. Where does that term, who coined that? This is a crime story. I've not heard that before.
Well, you know, John Leake is a best-selling true crime author. His books center around that, now focused on, you know, individual crimes. But this is now a crime against large groups of people. In fact, crimes against humanity.
That's it. That's exactly it. Crimes against humanity. It's an interesting way, though, to phrase the conversation. And I haven't heard that done before in that way. But it makes your mind think in different ways when you say, well, this is really a crime story. And I'm thinking, is it really? Well, I guess it really is, because there's still so much we don't know. I guess if this really is the crime story, John, do you think we'll ever we know who the criminals are, I guess. So will we hold them accountable, I guess? Will they pay a price? That's even a better way to say it, right?
Well, this is a bigger problem of a society. I mean, you know, you steal a used Ford pickup truck and you go to jail for 20 years.
Right.
If you pull off a huge Wall Street heist with bond trading or something, you know, then maybe you get a fine and your securities license is suspended for a year. So there's a disparity in how we go after things like this. But if you, now I appear to be promoting our book, but I take the timeline, you know, when you investigate a suspected crime, then it's very useful to plot a timeline of actions and utterances made by your suspect. And I don't think there's any question that for the two or three years preceding the arrival of SARS-CoV-2, there are all these pandemic planning exercises and simulations by various institutions which are networked. And what's notable is the emphasis that comes out starting in the year 2017 with the founding of CEPI, the Center for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, which is founded by the Gates Foundation and the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. They released a business plan. They actually circulated it to members and to prospective donors as sort of prospectus, in which they spell out, here is going to be the policy response to the next infectious disease pandemic. And there's absolutely nothing in the CEPI business plan about treatment. It is 100% entirely a response based on developing mass vaccination.
What was the year on that?
2017 okay. was when they circulated.
I thought so. Yeah.
The CEPI preliminary business. Anyone can Google it. CEPI, CEPI preliminary business plan.
With all of this said now, and we're now in the endemic, supposedly, although they never really, I don't think I've heard anybody say officials that the pandemic is over. Have you heard those words, Dr. McCullough? Have you heard that?
No. In fact, President Biden has just renewed the emergency authorization. Remember, the emergency authorization allows countermeasures. Countermeasures are these completely wide open flows of money and initiatives that we don't vote on this. There's no panels or subcommittees. It is broad, sweeping executive authority.
By the way, let me just throw something in there. What you say, because that was perfect, the wide arrangement of money. That's how we have the inflation right now that we have, because the way they spent throwing money around. And you see the fraud that was just reported on in the last week. We're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars have been fraudulently taken from all this COVID money. You see that?
Now, central banks have been basically printing money under this emergency declaration. I can tell you the financial consequences are going to be severe.
And we're feeling it now, and we're going to continue to feel it. I mean, that's the sad state that we're dealing with now. It just seems like there's never a moment where we can take a breath and a reprieve from this entire thing to say, okay, let's get on with what we would say back to some sort of a normal life. But then again, they predicted right up front from the pandemic, as everybody remembers, a new normal that was being thrown around a lot, actually, in the early days of this COVID thing, a new normal, which made me very uncomfortable with what that looked like. Looking at everything right now, where we sit right now. So a couple of things come to my mind with this whole conversation within the title of this book, The Courage to Face COVID-19. And that's part and parcel of the problem here. A lot of people in the healthcare community fail to have the courage. It really did take courage to go against the system. That's brazen to do that, because there's so many uncertainties and it's sort of unheard of. There's a lot of unknowns and you take a lot of personal risk. And we did that here at America Out Loud. We know that. But, you know, the facts and the data and the truth were the facts, the data and the truth. And it's hard to look at that and turn the other way on your fellow man. Dr. McCullough, you're looking back yourself now. I bet listeners would love to know. Looking at this whole thing, you know, you went through some very personal struggles with this yourself. I mean, you had COVID yourself, struggled through that, the family, but even personal with your job, other things that took place, which you talk about in the book at Baylor and all that. Any regrets with all this? What would you do different, I wonder? I never asked you that.
You know, I have to tell you, Malcolm, after all this, we're into our third year of this. In many, many ways, it's become the capstone of my medical career. If I've even helped one person, let alone save one life, it was worth it.
Yeah. Funny. You're funny. Well, if I only help one person, do you have some time? Can I read you a few emails? I mean, the emails and the response that come in here is so over the top that people are just so grateful. The words they use, and it's heartfelt, it's soulful. That's that connection back to humanity again that so many people were refusing to step forward. You know, it was a scary time back in the thrust of this thing. And John, as you're referencing a moment ago, back to with all the things we didn't know. John, I don't know if you know, but we've become really a central, I don't know what you want to call it, but COVID. Resource, I guess, where people just feel they can speak to the network in ways. And I'll tell you, it's such a privilege that people trust us with their personal stories and their facts. And I'll tell you, I'll never forget this, the way they write to the network and the way they pour their hearts out. It's remarkable, you know?
Well, it seems to me that you made a reputation for yourself as being open, being candid and open and wanting to learn something. I mean, the other piece of evidence that I've examined in all of this is that this immediate categorical from the outset declaration about what we were up against. I mean, immediately at the end of February, beginning of March, the message was, this is an unassailable thing. There were no distinctions made about within the population, who is at risk? Who is this thing really, to whom does this new virus really pose a threat? How do we define that section of the population? And how do we protect and treat that section of the population? And this was one of the things that Dr. McCullough said in our very first interview was, he asked himself, why aren't we trying to get a picture, zero in on and define, who is this really a problem for? Who, and the way to define that is who is landing in hospital. And so when you see there's no good faith attempt to try and ascertain what exactly are we up against, then you know that there are things happening that you know don't meet the eye.
Well, the media, you mentioned the media a moment ago here, and even to this day, as you were saying that, I mean, I think everybody understands that they still don't report the truth. They still are in denial to the facts. John, that this entire agenda with the pharmaceutical complex, as you address in your book here as well, the media oligarchs, the social media, all of it, the political officials, all of it, back to the crime story that you mentioned. When you look at all of this and that it's really still going on today, and people say to me oftentimes in these messages, like, will we ever wake up from this dream or nightmare, Malcolm? You know, it's like, because people really reference it as that. What do you, have you given thoughts, being a, well, your mind, I'm sure, travels as a prolific author as you are, but have you ever really given thought to what the real end, I know this gets a little spooky, but what the end agenda was for this thing? And I say that, leave that right there a moment, answer that if you can, but then here's the other big thing. I'm wondering about listeners, but when does the other shoe drop? What does the other shoe look like, I'm wondering? Any idea of those two things?
Well, I think it's useful to view the COVID pandemic response within the cognitive framework of this tension, and it's a longstanding tension, between the sovereignty of the nation state and in the case of the United States, I believe, is sort of the prize in terms of a nation state with a constitution. The tension between that, the sovereignty and the integrity of the United States and its as a constitutional republic, and this ambition, and I would describe it as an ambition to rule humanity across national frontiers, a true international governance of all of mankind.
So this was a takeover, John, is what you're saying. This is, yes, what they often refer to, which I didn't subscribe to that theory about the global reset or the new world order, which I never really, subscribed to those theories. But that's what you're speaking about, isn't it?
Yes, it's the old Roman idea of imperium, of command, not only of your own territory, your own jurisdiction, mm-hmm, but of all people. And there's nothing mysterious about this. It's a very easy to understand human anthropological reality that extends throughout all of history. And in many ways, the United States after the Second World War was and still is an imperium. But I think where people get confused is we think of an imperium, you know, going back to the Romans, as being a military endeavor. I mean, we think of Julius Caesar or someone like that who's expanding the Roman imperium. But I think that what we're looking at in the world right now is the military, you know, soldiers under arms, you know, using violence and invading frontiers. It's not a very effective and efficient way of gaining control. It's a much, and I think this is the crux of it, public health gets people's attention. I mean, if I tell you, well, there's a contagion and it's headed your way, and it's very frightening, and we possess technology and knowledge to protect you from it. Now you've got everybody's attention. So I think that the reason why this globalist endeavor has taken such an interest in public health initiatives is that public health initiatives are the perfect mechanism to extend control and command across all borders. I mean, if you go to 10 Downing Street and you say we've done some modeling and of this contagion and it's headed your way, it'll soon be here in London, we have the know-how and the technology to respond. Well, what do you think the Prime Minister of Great Britain is going to do? He's going to say, well, gentlemen, you have my attention. What should we do?
But that didn't happen.
Well, to some degree, it did. I mean, it doesn't it seem like all of these state leaders are sort of vassals? They all seem to be implementing the same policies, making the same pronouncements, all talking about building.
But what I'm saying is, you mentioned 10 Downer Street, but these officials didn't really want to have a conversation, is my point. It was sort of their way, and that was it.
Well, I think that when you impress upon a prime minister who doesn't have medical training, we have the authority, we have the understanding, the Imperial College, this, that, and the other. This is coming your way, Boris, and it's going to be on your watch if you don't do what we instruct you to do. So he didn't have the confidence to say, well, I'm going to consult with someone else. Like, let's talk with this fella in Dallas, Peter McCullough, and see what he says. There was this acceptance of the biopharmaceutical complex.
That's exactly it. They all did that across the board. Now, there were some heroes in there, back to courage, and Dr. McCullough, one of them is, and I wonder how many others you might even point out, but one of them clearly was Senator Ron Johnson, absolute hero in this field, right?
It's true. Ron Johnson, Rand Paul, Member of Parliament Craig Kelly in Australia, they all come to mind. There's heroes emerging in Canada, South America, the EU, Sri Lanka. And, you know, we've networked and gotten to know many of them. But I agree with this, that the leaders were held captive by the stakeholders, and the stakeholders being the biopharmaceutical complex and the related agencies. And they all, by the way, are so incestuous. You know, our FDA commissioners now work for vaccine companies, et cetera, that, you know, when they basically present a president or an executive leadership team with a pronouncement that they're going to be wiped out with a virus, they better get in line and follow the plan. They have almost no choice. It's like a hostage situation.
And they've become kings and very, very wealthy, Peter. You know that. I mean, very, very wealthy. The money that's been pulled down from this thing is incredible. I seen a report, one of the vaccine companies saying, yeah, we really want this one approved for the babies, the young ones, you know. Well, because it's money. I mean, all these people are after is money. They don't, you talk about humanity, Dr. McCullough. How is it that, I mean, how do these people live with themselves? I mean, how do they even sleep at night? I really can't comprehend it. For the sake of a dollar bill, and many of them, obviously, they're willing to see people suffer and die. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
There seems to be no limit. Today, there's a report out that the standards are going to change for children, that we don't even need to have 50% effectiveness or 50% coverage on a vaccine, that in fact, for the children, almost any type of result would be enough to just go ahead and promote vaccines with no assurances on short, middle, or long-term safety.
Yeah. Do these things eventually come off the market? Or do they just keep? Because I just see another thing, I think it was yesterday, today, about the boosters and the lies out there. Back to the media, what John was saying, the lies. That all the boosters are so effective, and we really want you to get this third one. And you know, the administration is still pushing it. Does this ever stop?
It doesn't. In fact, the false narrative is propagated by new COVID victims. Most recently, Peter Hotez, Baylor College of Medicine, Houston, a vaccine enthusiast, actually developing his own vaccine. He's, I'm sure, triple, quadruple vax. Now he has COVID with symptoms. He's taking the new Pfizer drug and he thinks, thank goodness I got vaxxed because, I have a mild case. Well, Omicron is mild for everyone. And people are now looking at the failure of the vaccines and try to declare victory.
He's using it as a sales talk. Yeah. I mean, look, I see that right away. They're clever. Very, 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 very clever. All right. So this book, The Courage to Face COVID-19, I mean, that's a great title in itself, because this really did take a lot of courage. Preventing hospitalization and death while battling the biopharmaceutical complex. John, you've never written a book like this before, I bet.
No, I have not. What I have looked at in the past, the stories I've researched, as Dr. McCullough mentioned, it's been more conventional crime in which there is a clear suspect or perpetrator, and then there's a well-defined victim. This is truly a mass societal crime. It's a crime that's committed really, well, not only against any particular society, but all societies. So you asked about money, and this is something that we explore in the book. I'm not the guy that observed this. It's kind of an old anthropological observation that when humans are engaged in the single-minded pursuit of something, and this probably has origins in our early days as hunters. So you get a group of guys together, and they get their weapons and they get organized to go hunt antelope or buffalo or whatever it may be. There is a goal-mindedness, a goal orientation in that endeavor that engages a different part of the mind. Let's go for it. Let's pursue this. And we're pursuing something that's very valuable. So there is a lack of circumspection and a lack of thoughtfulness about, well, what if this is having negative consequences for people who are not part of our enterprise? And I think that it's that goal orientation that's aimed at gain of, you know, we're all part of this. We're all going to get rich. We're all going to have a good time. That causes a sort of a moral blind spot. So
a moral blind spot. Yeah.
I don't think so. Here's my point. Hmm. I don't think that a lot of people are thinking. They're engaged in the endeavor. It's a very exciting endeavor, and they're not stopping to think about it.
Yeah. I just wrote it down. You said some really cool things, but moral blind spot, I love it. And also this is, I guess I would say, based on using your language, this would be the biggest crime story, I would imagine, certainly in our lifetimes, without a doubt, but maybe all in existence. I don't really know if there's another one that surpasses it, but it's up there, isn't it?
Well, right? I think that we oftentimes think of these big crimes against humanity, you know, they happen within the context of a military occupation.
Yeah, like that's
it. The German occupation of Poland.
So not the people you trust, in other words. Listen. Not the people you elected to high office. Not the people that you trust with your health care. Not the people with your meds. I mean, those people, you wouldn't expect that from at all. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and I think that our medical institutions in Washington, the federal institutions, one thing I've learned by studying this is that they're captured.
How do you spell corrupt again? Can you spell corrupt, John? That's right. Is that C-O-R? Well, two R's or one R in there? You don't have to answer that.
Well, this, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talks about this a lot in his book, and I think he's absolutely right. It's not so much, you know, meet me, you know, in the back room of my Italian restaurant, and I'll give you $1,000 to participate in my organized crime. It's more, there's a board position that awaits you when you leave the FDA, or should you ever leave the drug approval division of the FDA, you know, you can come to work for Purdue Pharma. We think you're a great guy. And so, you know, you've been captured. The Pied Piper has seized you. And I think that's something that Robert F. K. Jr. He's made a great point there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, I will tell you, John, as you were talking about the restaurant and the Italian restaurant in the back there with the money and what have you, my thoughts went back when I was in my early 20s. I had a client in my early advertising days that in the Italian restaurant in the back would pay me with cash.
So you're an old hand.
John, I digress. I digress. So that is absolutely true. I love the man. He's no longer here, but he was so funny. He would literally pay me with cash. And that's the only way he operated. So I assumed he had quite a successful place. So I never really complained and was happy just as well to take it. In any event, the book is The Courage to Face COVID-19. Preventing Hospitalization and Death While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. Again, it's on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com. There's a series of books there on the right sidebar. If you go to the front page right there, you'll see a link to this book. It'll be there. It'll pop you right in and buy the book there. It's right in the America Out Loud bookstore. And so easy to find it there, The Courage to Face COVID-19. I've got to have, John, I'm going to invite you and along with Dr. McCullough onto our number one show on the platform, our Viewpoint this Sunday, our news magazine. And I'm going to do that so we can put a little more spotlight on this book as well, so people know about it. I even forgot you had that book when it came out, Peter, but here we are, right?
Well, I really, you know, Malcolm, I was intentionally keeping it quiet because we were just getting to the final touches. And once we got the go-ahead, within the last 72 hours, there's been a flurry of announcements and excitement.
John, thank you for joining us here on America Loud Pulse. And we'll stay close and we'll help you with this book for sure. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Malcolm. I appreciate it.
This new show, I mean, we've only been at it for, I think, about 5 weeks or so. It's brand new on America Out Loud, but it really is taking on a life of its own in a really cool way. The program, of course, the talk radio version of this is 5 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. The encore is at 10 p.m. So 5 and 10, and you hear the latest live version of the show. But let me give you an example. When you go, first of all, if you go to America Out Loud Pulse in the nav bar under shows, if you go to the nav bar under shows and you just go to America Out Loud Pulse right there, there's also a logo on the left side bar, but you find your way around America Out Loud. It's a very easy site to navigate, of course, as all of you pretty well know. But if you go to the Pulse page, you can ask a question to any host on any day. It's right there, first name. We just need the first name. We don't need anything else. Email address. Who's your question for? Which doctor? It's right there. And you submit your question right in there. And so to give you an example with the great group here, and go look at some of these shows and listen to them if you haven't heard them. And I'm just right now on the feed, and I'll give you an example. Dr. Marilyn Singleton, who does the Monday show, China's stranglehold on pharmaceuticals. That's a big topic. And she just had a show with the lady who wrote the book on that, Rosemary Gibson. It's a phenomenal show. Just went to podcast here within the last day. So go listen to that one on podcast now. All the shows go to podcast a day after talk radio. Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, Live Free from Fear of Medical Tyranny and Oppression. Just went to podcast. That's the Friday show. Okay. Extreme Deadline, Biden about to give over U.S. sovereignty to the World Health Organization. This is a story. This has been the number one trending viral story, article that has gone out here over the last 2.5 days on the platform. Unbelievable. From Dr. Peter Breggin and his wife, Ginger Ross Breggin, are the host. And they're the host on Thursday. Wednesday, of course, is Dr. Peter McCullough and yours truly here, Malcolm Out Loud. And disinformation and COVID Q&A was last week's show and Q&A 22. We've been doing these for a while now, so we kind of keep a number on them. And then Dr. Jordan Vong and Dr. Stuart Tankersley, their last show just went to podcast, Pandemic Phase Off or Political Phase On, and they are on Tuesdays. This was a wild, marvelous idea. And I'll tell you, I just listened to their live show on Tuesday, Dr. Jordan Vong and Dr. Stuart, and just terrific. Great chemistry. Love it. And they really bring the goods. So there's your lineup right there, Monday through Friday. I wanted to take a moment to tell you all of that. And those shows are all available on podcast on that thread. And you can send in a question to any host and we'll get it to the host. And they'll talk about it on their show and so on and so forth right there. My fellow Americans, we're going to take a quick pause right now. We'll join you on the other side. You're listening to America Out Loud Pulse.
I want to put in a big word for healthy cell supplements. The GI tract is not functioning normally in long COVID syndrome. I'm convinced of it. There are multiple studies. We need a much better absorbed set of nutraceutical and vitamin products for long COVID syndrome, and that's Healthy Cell. They have an entire line that's safe and effective, can help people through the long COVID syndrome. I found the best way to use Healthy Cell products is use them every day, not on and off, on and off. Take them every day consistently. The Immune Super Boost, Focus and Memory, and the REM Sleep Supplement all have powerful effects in long COVID syndrome. Go to HealthyCell.com and in the promo code, type in out loud for 20% off your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. It is Malcolm Out Loud here along with Dr. Peter McCullough. And what a great conversation. You know, it's the first time I talked to John Leake, Peter, and I really, really like him. Man, he is well spoken.
I tell you what, he is a real jewel. He's a man of the world. And he has to be one of the most talented contemporary writers we have in America.
Wow, what a thrill to have him on. I truly, truly enjoyed it. But as we bring it back here, again, one of the big things, I want to get into it, just a lot of questions here. We're going to dive right in here. But I want to start and talk about some of our very unique partnerships here on America Out Loud that we are privileged to have just the opportunity to be with, to improve people's lives. That's what it's all about. The first one is a long-term partnership on this platform, and it is Healthy Cell. And you hear me talk about it, you hear Dr. McCullough talk about it. Actually, many of our hosts, Paul Engel on the Constitution Study, is many of our hosts talk about it. After Dark, they do as well. So we have some great programming. Healthy Cell is a remarkable product. There's a lot of products. It's a micro gel is the big, I would say that's the heart of their product, right, Peter? Is that micro gel part of it?
Yeah, the micro gel technology has really solved the problem of hypoabsorption. You know, so many of these vitamins are in these chalky, bulky tablets or these really clumsy capsules. They've really solved it with the microgel. You know, it tastes good and it's rapidly absorbed. It gets the nutrients where they need to be.
So when it's a pill form, as I understand it, Peter, your body doesn't absorb it. Number one, it doesn't absorb it as fast. And from what I understand, and you tell me, that it doesn't, you don't get the full benefit of it. It doesn't absorb the entire thing. Is that accurate?
It's true. Sometimes the problem is the vehicle that as it begins to break down, remember certain nutrients have to be delivered, you know, in certain places in the GI tract. And with the microgel technology, things are ready to go immediately as soon as they get down through the esophagus into the stomach. So much of the action is in the proximal small bowel.
That's right. So listen, last few days, Peter, I pushed the envelope a little bit. I could feel my body resisting. Not happy because I haven't been getting proper sleep. You know what happens when you don't get sleep, right? I mean, you do it yourself, right? You don't function well, right?
Well, you know, you don't function well. The sleep architecture gets destroyed. You have a surge of stress hormones the next day. The stress hormones put you on edge. Then you don't sleep well the next night. It's a vicious cycle.
Well, it's what's happened to me the last 3 days. I've really cheated myself. And I don't say this proudly because I don't find this a real beautiful thing to be doing to myself. But where I'm only getting like, well, maybe 4 hours, 3.5, 4 hours of sleep, which, you know, is not enough for our bodies. So last night, as a perfect example, I said, you know what, I'm going to stop and I'm going to bed by midnight. I'm not staying up till 2:33 in the morning. And I can't on deadlines. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to bed at midnight and I'm going to take REM sleep. The thing I like about REM sleep, it forces you to sleep. Do you know I woke up this morning at about 8:10, almost well rested, obviously with a few more deadlines to do and a little bit of a panic meter, but I thought, oh my golly. And but I felt good. I actually, you know, I said to myself, you know what? I'm not going to rush. I'm going to take a walk. I took my dog, Zachary, my little Chinese crested Peter. We took a nice walk and then come back, take the healthy cell. But sometimes you got to do that, right?
You know, I completely agree. You know, the average person your age, Malcolm, needs 8.2 hours of sleep. And people who schedule less sleep, they actually are chronically sleep deprived.
That's exactly it. So anyways, I took REM sleep. I really liked this. I know you talk a lot about it. You actually started using REM sleep before I did, and you liked it a lot. And actually, that's where I really got, because I never really needed sleep mechanisms for me to go to sleep. You know, usually I went to sleep pretty well. But
you know, there's it's worth talking about. There's a difference between what's called sleep pressure. That is the idea of, you know, what puts you to sleep. There's a difference between getting put to sleep and then having a high quality sleep. And here, this sleep supplement gives you the high quality sleep that other sleeping aids don't.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I don't have time to get into the others, friends, but Focus for brain fog, another big one. Brain fog, this long COVID, I really am trying to help as many people with long COVID as I can. A lot of our listeners, this is a real problem out there. And we've got a great article just up on the platform as you're listening to this. Just went up last night from Dr. Joel Hirshhorn. Go read that. It's very, very good. It's a good read for you to take a look at. Focus and recall, really, really good. Immune Super Boost has vitamin C, vitamin D3, zinc, echinacea extract, elderberry extract. All our listeners get 20% off. I could spend a whole hour on just this, friends, but you get the point. HealthyCell.com/OutLoud, or just click a banner ad back at America Out Loud here. I'm going to jump into some of the questions right now here. This one here is from Michelle. After learning about early treatment protocols for COVID and the benefits of ivermectin and HCQ, I wonder why we don't use these medications to treat viral illness like flu. And I thought this question was fascinating, Peter. She said, can you please speak to whether I can use these antivirals to treat routine illness to stop slow viral replication? If yes, why hasn't this been used as standard practice for decades?
The product that probably has the most history in testing against different viral syndromes is hydroxychloroquine, because it impairs the endosomal entry. It brings zinc into the cell. Zinc is a general polymerase inhibitor that's used against other coronaviruses, other sources of the common cold. Ivermectin, not so much, only because its focus has been on parasitic illnesses. I think what's going to come out of COVID-19, and as the listener implies, is a lot more research and interest into combating the common cold. I have to tell you, the direct application I've picked up is the virucidal nasal and oral washes with povidone iodine or hydrogen peroxide.
You're talking like the Cofix RX, you mean, that sort of thing, the nasal rinse?
I have to tell you, Cofix RX, my wife just had a serious cold, and we have elderly people in our house, and I had her on the Cofix RX on a routine schedule. You know, she worked her way through the cold, but importantly, no one else in the house got it. And I remarked on that. I said, you know, you became less contagious because the virus was being contained in the nasal passages, actually being killed by Cofix RX.
I mean, this really is a remarkable stuff. Peter, when that Cofix RX, when that pandemic first happened, if we had all used Cofix early on, the povidone iodine we're speaking of, as a nation, we would have been like way better off, right? Is that a fair statement?
There's no question, because in the pivotal trial done in Bangladesh, about 80 to 90% of people became non-infectious on day 3. Do you know with no nasal treatment, people are infectious for about 14 days, this night and day. So what happened is we allowed the pandemic to propagate with this long infectivity period. We could have knocked it down with Cofix RX.
I'm super excited about this one. If that is another partnership, friends. I wasn't planning on what we just did, but it happened. Just remember to get 20% off with the OutLoud code. I would be failing if I didn't tell you that. There's banner ads again back at America Out Loud. It's another strategic partnership. I don't call these advertisers or sponsors or any of that. They're partners. Because we're trying to help people. So they're strategic partnerships. That's the way I look at this. Crystal says, my father is 77, tested positive for COVID. He had fever, chills, aches, slight headaches, dry cough, and now wet cough, which I hope is not coming from the lungs. We've started him yesterday as soon as symptoms started on ivermectin, 12 milligram zinc, vitamin C, D, and quercetin. He's been resting well, but while awake was coughing after eating. It sounded wet. What more should we be doing? We are limited to ivermectin at the moment. We have enough for 4 days. Any help would be appreciated.
You know, I can't provide direct case consultation, but I would say that check the ivermectin dose. We use 600 micrograms per kilogram. So that would mean for a standard man, typically 30 to potentially 60 milligrams of ivermectin per day. So the dose may be quite low. The other issue is it sounds like he's presenting with severe pulmonary symptoms early, particularly this, quote, wet cough. So I'm worried about a secondary bronchitis or bronchopneumonia. You know, we commonly use azithromycin or doxycycline in addition to, but I think this would be a case where we'd want antibiotics early.
Yeah, I remember the ivermectin. I took like 12 of those little pills, you know, right when I took them. So, right.
So that was 36 milligrams for you, Malcolm, just to give the listener an idea.
Yeah. And so Laura says, Canadians with no vaccination can't board a plane, train, or any kind of public transportation as the messenger RNA vaccines are so damaging. I'm looking for other options because we can't travel. You know, this is the problem with a lot of these people. Health Canada recently approved a new vaccine. Now, have you heard of this one? COVIFENZ.
This is COVIFENZ. COVIFENZ is, yes, it is actually derived from plants. Wow. So it is actually grown up in plants. It's an antigen-based vaccine. It appears to be safe. It's modestly effective against the original strains. Now, women of childbearing potential were excluded, pregnant women, all the usual exclusions. But I think if put into this position, this one, at least with the immediate risks, would be potentially safer than the genetic vaccines. But again, we have no long-term assurances on safety. And the disturbing thing is to sacrifice one's health in order to travel with these vaccines.
It's sick what they're doing to people. It's really, really sick. I mean, how many vaccines are there on the planet right now fighting COVID? I'm speaking about that. You don't even know that number, do we? It's got to be huge.
It's probably about a dozen or so. I think we're up to 50 or 60 in development that COVIFENZ appeared with another Chinese vaccine in the New England Journal of Medicine in the last week or so. Listeners can go to my Twitter feed, P_McCullough MD. I've reviewed both of them.
Okay. A couple of others on vaccine injuries I want to try to get in here. Mary says, unfortunately, my 74-year-old husband has had two J&J jabs. Boy, J&J is going under a lot of problems I'm seeing in the last few days of my reading on that. The listener says, Mary, he was planning to get his knee replaced in 2 weeks. The blood work results just came in back, showing his WBC, the white blood count, at 2.5. The docs seems not to understand why it is so low. He's a vegan, but just before the jabs, his WBC was 3.6. Is the low count a possible reaction to the vaccine? Is it wise for him to go ahead with the surgery? Any recommendations?
It certainly is. Look at the subcount of the WBC. The lymphocytes are the fraction that are specifically depressed. It almost certainly is due to the vaccine. So there's theoretical risks that he could be an increased risk for a wound infection with the surgery.
All right, Tiffany says, I'm curious about side effects. I received my second vax about a year ago. I've had high blood pressure for the past couple of months, although I never had a problem before. Is it possible that it's related to this vaccine business, or is it too far apart to be related?
Blood pressure elevations are related to the vaccine. One thing we've learned with the vaccines, they only provide about 6 months of immunity protection, but the side effects are long lasting.
Yeah, I mean, my wife had she never had high blood pressure in her life, and she's gotten it from the COVID business. So I know firsthand that this thing is definitely vaccine driven. I could answer that question, but I'll leave it to you. Debbie says, my son, who is 21, has been healthy. Recently, he took the Pfizer vax. Wow, in March 21. Second, April 21, he went for the echocardiogram to check a murmur in his heart, ended up finding a quadricuspid aortic valve. During this test, it was detected that he has an enlarged thymus gland. Doesn't have MG or any symptoms suggesting that he does. No testicular cancer or tumors, etc. Do you think this could be enlarged due to getting the vaccine again? He also received a booster in January 22. Oh my golly. Because of pressure from his university. All the things we talk about, Dr. McCullough, he's gotten all of them because of all these pressures, and now he's having heart problems. Wow.
Well, the quadricuspid valve he was born with, that's a congenital abnormality, and that'll need to be followed with echocardiography through the course of his life. The enlarged thymus has been reported post-vaccination. I saw a patient such as that in my office this week. There is some due diligence to re-image the thymus gland to make sure it's not an emerging T-cell lymphoma.
Okay. I'm going to sneak one last one in from Zanita. She says, I'm writing to ask if epilepsy has been a reported side effect from the Moderna vaccine. My 24-year-old nephew, healthy and active, never having had any seizures, has suddenly developed epilepsy after the second vaccine. All MRI, EEG, and other tests show no causation from brain function. Could this be a reported side effect, you think?
I say yes. Now, the released Pfizer documents, remember, Pfizer is similar technology to Moderna, listed 1,291 new diseases that could be emerging, including neurologic disease. In America Out Loud, on one of the McCullough reports, I provocatively titled the piece, One Messenger RNA, 1,291 Diseases or Ways to Die. And I think until proven otherwise, all these things that emerge, it has to be the vaccine until proven otherwise.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking right there. There's so many. We're not going to really know how many of things are attributed to this, if we'll ever know, really. But I'm sure it's an endless list. And we're in uncharted waters, aren't we, Dr. McCullough?
We are. We have absolutely no idea what's going to happen over the long term. We are installing the genetic code for a dangerous spike protein that was manipulated in a lab in Wuhan, China. So all bets are off across major categories: cardiovascular, neurological, immunological, and hematological. Diseases or problems in these categories, I think, are vaccine-induced until proven otherwise.
That's exactly it. Well, my fellow Americans, our friends around the globe, we have squeezed every ounce we possibly can out of this hour here. A tremendous thank you here to John Leake up front in the broadcast there in this wonderful new book here that is co-authored with Dr. Peter McCullough here. Right here, you speak about The Courage to Face COVID-19 is the title of that, please. Preventing Hospitalization and Death While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. That was always the case, my friends, and there it is right there. The book is in the America Out Loud bookstore. It's on the front page of America Out Loud. Get the book. There's a lot of great books out there, a lot of great ones on COVID. Dr. Bregan's book is out there. A lot of COVID-related and other types of books. So check it out. And remember to share all those podcasts, please, on America Out Loud Pulse. Help us get the word out there so this show continues to skyrocket. So become the fastest growing is what the goal is here. Hey, thank you for joining us on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud, America.